If you know me, you know that I absolutely love reading. I love books. And I always love when I can talk writing with any author that agrees to sit down for this show. About 6 months ago, I came across an author online that's been shaking things up in the romance genre, particularly in erotic romance. Yeah, you heard that right. What drew me to her in the first place are the many subgenres she dabbles in, always with romance and erotica at the forefront of each story she tells. How does one do that? How can an author cast such a wide net with their work that they've become known across genres and have been able to engage with different audiences who all take something unique from her writing? Well, we're all about to find out. This is Thea Landon. Welcome back to the show, Thea Landon. Thank you for doing this tonight. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, The Hummingbird and the Hawk is the book we'll get into as much as we can tonight. Let's start the same way we always do. Tell me about your education and your professional background. We'll definitely get to writing in a bit, but tell me a little bit about sort of where you went to school, all that jazz.
Oh, it has been a long and wild ride, and very little of it actually has to do with writing. I always joke around on social media, ask me about my music degrees that I don't use. You can sort of, you can see it. I know no one else can see it. There's a keyboard behind me. There's 5 million instruments in the cabinet behind me, flute, clarinet, saxophone, multiple saxophones, multiple clarinets. Yeah. So, you know, obviously that doesn't have anything to do with writing at all. So I went to school for that. Actually was a teacher for a while, a few years, had some fun there.
Okay.
Completely switched careers during the recession of however long it was, 2008, 9, 10, 11. Felt like it lasted a really long time.
It sure did.
And now I work in the legal field, also not doing anything involving creative writing.
You know, it's funny, in doing research for the chat tonight, I'm really astounded at like how much content you have out there. Multiple genres, different structures, changing writing styles. Is that tough to do? Like, does there have to be like a mindset change in order to like genre jump when you're doing writing?
I kind of joke around that the reason I call myself a romance author is because I can play around with different genres. As long as I put a romance in there somewhere, I can say, this is a romance first, and then do the sci-fi, the fantasy, the contemporary. I even tried a mystery once, and I don't think the mystery part was that good, to be honest, because I'm not that smart. But since it had a romance, but I'm like, no, it's a romance. The mystery just takes a back seat. I promise this is a romance.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I imagine for that kind of content, you have to be writing all the time. And I hear so many authors talk about getting into like that right mindset for, you know, to just sit down and write. What do you do to get there? Like, can it be scheduled? Like, how does it work for you? How do you bake writing into your life?
People don't always believe me when I say this, but I have not watched TV in about 3 years.
Yeah.
If something's on in the background, you know, when I go wherever I go, or on our family vacations, sometimes we do set aside time for the Jeopardy Wheel of Fortune hour as a family bonding activity. But other than that, I follow no series. I pay for my Netflix, Amazon, Disney Plus subscriptions and do not use them. The rest of the family does. People will recommend shows to me. I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds great. And I'm not going to watch them because, again, I made the decision a while ago that I really want to focus on writing, and I knew that meant I actually had to sit down and write. So no TV for me in 3 years.
Is that difficult though? I mean, I imagine, yeah, you make that it's a conscious decision you have to make. Like, I'm going to give my all to this. In order to do that, I have to sort of cut something out of my life. Is that hard to not fall back on and just be like, I don't want to write tonight. I just want to veg out. I just want to consume, or I don't want to do this right now. You know, is that tough to kind of balance all of that?
Well, don't get me wrong. There's definitely nights where I do nothing but just screw around on the internet when I should be writing, but you know, that's a different kind of screen. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, I have 2 kids, and once they're in bed, that is my quiet time. That's another reason I don't do TV anymore. I don't want anyone talking at me. I don't want any noise. I don't want any flashing lights and yelling and sound. I just want my quiet house in the evenings, and that is how and when I write.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what you're writing. The new book is The Hummingbird and the Hawk. How does this one develop for you? Like, does it start with an idea, like a structure? Like, how does that work?
See, I think originally I got the idea for this one last summer. I wanted to do something with an age gap romance. Start off stereotypical, the older, powerful man in his high-powered career, and the younger woman, he takes under his wing, but obviously he wants to bang her by the end of the prologue. We know where this is going. But, and I don't want to spoil things too much here, there is a twist by the end, and it does not necessarily play out the way you may think it will.
All right. Well, we won't spoil anything. We'll link it in the show notes so everybody can pick up a copy.
Sounds good.
Is it tough to write? Let's see. How do I ask this question? Romance is obviously, it's a very flooded market. Is it tough to step into romance and to do something that sticks out, that makes it unique? I mean, I can imagine that can be difficult when you're trying to create something, whether it's from scratch or whether it's from an idea. How does that work for you? Do you test any of that out? Like, do you look and see, has this been done before, when you go to write?
I think in general, the world of publishing has been changing a lot lately, regardless of which path you choose, self-publishing, traditional publishing, smaller indie presses. A lot of it comes down to marketing. In some ways, it doesn't even really matter what you're writing, it's how you're selling it. So when we talked about time before, there are some days where I feel like I've spent so much time on social media just getting my name and face out there. And who cares what's even inside the books at that point? But just making sure people know who I am, where they can find me, and hopefully pick up a book somewhere along the way.
Well, and it's interesting because you talked earlier about romance and, you can really pair it with anything. Do you have people, like, a lot of feedback about people that say, hey, we want more of a romance, we want less of the romance, is there a strike you have to make when it comes to balancing those two? Like, so one doesn't overtake the other?
Again, since I am marketing myself primarily as an erotic romance author, people know that that's what they're going to get, that no matter what else is going on in the background, they are guaranteed at least one spicy scene by the end.
Yeah, there is definitely a method to the madness, that's for sure. So, all right, well, let's talk about some of the character stuff. The books, they're very character driven. I'm always curious to ask authors if they develop character sort of as they write, or is it better to sort of know what the arc is going to be? Do you ever allow yourself to play with that when you're developing characters for books?
I know we always talk about, in the writing world, the plotting versus pantsing, how much you have set up before you get going, how much is just completely on a whim and everything in between. I call myself a plantser, somewhere in the middle where I have a very basic outline before I start and then kind of fill it in as I go along. But there have definitely been times along the way where I've had some surprises, like someone who I thought was going to be a minor character wound up playing more of a role. Someone I'm like, oh, this side character is so much fun. Everyone's gonna love them. And then, oops, they haven't said a single word in 50 pages. Oh well, sometimes it plays out that way.
I know the answer to this question, I'm sure, but do you pull from people when you create characters? Do you pull traits? Do you cherry pick? Oh, this will be a really great trait for a character that I'm working on or something like that. I'm sure that happens a lot, right?
Sometimes, I mean, I get maybe the question is whether I do it intentionally or not. There's definitely been times that I've written my friends into books sort of as a joke. But as far as really basing a main character off someone I know, I think that's really tricky in romance, and you probably don't want to do that because you don't want to make your friends mad at you. And especially with the explicit romance, that sort of feels like it's crossing a line.
It's funny for me, like, I speaking of just like character development or just kind of picking things from real life, if I come across something that I see that I or I think about, a line I want to kind of write down or something, I'll stick it in my voice memo or something. I've been really astounded at sort of what can spring from just an exchange of dialogue or a sentence or something like that. I imagine that probably happens with you when you write. You can just kind of pull that from anywhere, and it's funny that I like to take those things and try to fit them in where I can, because that was like the original line that sparked the idea. So I think that's pretty neat. I'm sure a lot of authors do that, though.
We all have our methods somehow. Again, I don't always have an outline, but when I do, I keep it in a Google Doc so I can access it whenever. And also, I write in order because I know if I didn't, I would just write the fun stuff first and then never go back and connect the dots. So if I'm writing, say the third chapter of the book, and I think of a really, really great line for the end of the book, I'll put it in that Google Doc outline and see if it still fits in later on.
Yeah, that's cool. We have a lot of young people that will listen to the show that I think that want to be authors, that are writers, that want to do what you do. What would you say to people that want to get into this? I mean, the indie author world is interesting. I've been in it myself for about 4 years now, and you know, you are always learning something new, but what advice could you give people? You know, what would you do if you could do it over again? You know, all that jazz. I'd love to give you the floor to talk about that.
I know everyone probably said this, but you really need to be open to constructive feedback, especially when you are first starting out. I thought I knew everything when I first, like, oh, I can write a best-selling book. Sure, how hard can this be? And then the first several editors that I worked with at smaller indie presses, they were so nice about it. Don't get me wrong. They were lovely, lovely people, and I'm so glad I had the chance to work with them. But oh my God, did they whip me into this shape? They're like, you can't do this. There's too many adverbs. This is a comma splice, and you have 20 more of them in this chapter. And of course, it stings at first. You want everyone to love your art that you are putting out into the world. And of course, even when it's polished, not everyone's going to love it. But I think, especially when you're starting out, you really need to be open to feedback, especially when it comes to genre conventions, saying, oh, readers won't like this, they will love this. We joke around on social media that, you know, every now and then a new edgelord comes in with their hot take of, does romance really need a happy ending? Yes, it does, period. Don't think that you're going to reinvent the wheel and change the world. Be like, well, I'm going to be the person to write a romance without a happy ending and everyone's going to love it. If you want to take that risk, go right ahead. But that's probably a situation where you want to listen to the more experienced people who have been down that path before.
You know, it's funny. I remember I came across you initially on I guess is it Twitter? It's X now, right? It's
I
Twitter.
still call it
It's
Twitter.
Twitter. All right.
It's Twitter. No one calls it
Right.
X.
Nobody called it X. Okay, good. I love the engagement you do over there, the like the your smut mail and your just the interaction with readers and all that stuff. Can you talk a little bit about that from like again from an indie author standpoint, using social media to engage, you know, a readership, a base? You know, is that part of the gig? I mean, you can't make it without doing that, I imagine, right?
These days, I really don't think you can. As I said before, regardless of which path you choose for publishing, I don't have firsthand experience here, though I've been told even the traditional publishers, they are expecting you to come in with at least some sort of base that wants to read what you write, a marketing plan, a social media presence. Like, gone are the days where they're going to take care of all of that for you. You need to be willing to put yourself out there. Is it fair? Probably not. We really just want people to read our words and not, you know, look at our faces and read our nonsense tweets all day. But that's kind of just the way the publishing world is right now, for better or
Yeah,
worse.
boy, very well said. All right, I got two questions that were sent in that people wanted me to ask,
Okay.
and so I'm going to give them to you here. The first two, or the first of the two, how do you handle any kind of situation where you've maybe written yourself into a corner? You know, you're sort of frustrated with writing, you're not sure what to do. How do you handle those types of situations, and what advice would you give for people to sort of step out of that and be able to overcome that kind of stuff?
Different authors probably handle this in different ways.
Sure.
On rare occasions, I will cut and go back. And when I say cut, I do not mean delete completely. I mean copy and paste into a different Word document in case I change my mind later. But most of the time, you know, there's a saying, the only way out is through. You just have to keep going, keep writing. As they say, with the first draft, it doesn't have to be perfect. You can always go back and fix it later. Just keep going because any writing counts as writing. One word is still better than 0 words.
Amen to that. All right. The second one, and it's the elephant in the room. If we don't have this conversation tonight, it's gonna
Uh-oh.
people are gonna be like, what the hell is going on? So you obviously are very well known for writing very, 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 very good sex scenes.
I hope so.
You talked about it earlier. You're guaranteed to get something in each book. I have read, you know, from authors who cannot write those types of scenes when they make those attempts, and good on them for attempting, they can't. I would love for you to talk to me about what makes a good sex scene when you write it, because you know, yeah, it's interesting content and everybody wants to talk about that, but there are good sex scenes and bad sex scenes, and you write very good scenes. So give us some advice on that for aspiring romance authors.
Well, first of all, thank you for that.
Yes.
A lot of it, I think, actually comes down to the same writing of advice I would give for any sort of scene,
Mm.
which, number one, I would say vary your sentence structure. Because sometimes people send me their scenes for feedback, which I am willing to give. And so many times, even in a sex scene, I just see a whole paragraph of he did this, she did that, he did this, she did that. And it doesn't even matter at a certain point what the actions are, but just, I guess, the boring rhythm of it, you know, it makes it sound like you're reading a recipe card and there's nothing exciting about it. Again, it doesn't even matter what the actions are, if it's something sexually explicit or if it's not, it's just this, that, this, that. So varying the structures, varying the sentence length. Don't be afraid of the really short, impactful sentences here and there. You don't have to go on and on for 3 pages about, you know, one kiss. And then the second thing is, and again, this goes for any kind of scene, not just the spicy ones. They would say all five senses. Seeing is great. Hearing is great. We love that dialogue. But smell, taste, touch, make sure you're hitting all of those. And again, that's not just for the sex scenes, that's for everything to really engage the reader.
Yeah, I hope people will listen to that again, because I think that's very important. And I do believe that it does, it kind of works for everything. You know, that's kind of, if you can kind of learn to write in that style and kind of make sure you hit those posts, or I guess those goals, I think you do really well. The consistency in your writing, the releases and what you're putting out, is you must be writing just all the time. Are you just always writing? It's got to be just like almost 24/7, or as much as you can, I imagine.
No, like I said, a lot of times I'm just fucking, oh shoot, I didn't
You
ask if
can
I was allowed
say
to
it.
say the
Go
word.
for it. No,
A
you're
lot of
good.
times I'm just screwing around on
Go
the
for
internet. I
That's
meant to
okay.
ask you that before we got started and it completely
You
slipped
can let him
my mind.
fly. You can let him fly. I not a
All
problem.
right, so many nights I am fucking around on the internet when I should be writing. I would also like to point out that I am not churning out 100K word novels, you
Right,
know, on a
right.
monthly basis. I have my long works. I really like to be around 20,000 to 30,000 words. I think that's where I'm strongest. Just get in, tell a good story, don't bog it down in unnecessary details, and get right back out. Another sort of trick that I've had over the past few years, not really a trick, and this won't work for everyone. I did mention that how I've worked with smaller indie presses before. And again, they're great. I think they are a wonderful way to get started. Again, have someone else pay for editing and formatting and cover design. You won't get as much money, you know, out of the royalties, but again, excellent way to get started. The very first smaller publisher that I worked for shut down a couple years ago, and the rights to all of those books reverted back to me. Some of them did need some cleaning up to bring up to my current standards, but at this point, as of January of this year, I re-released all of them. So while it may look like I was writing nonstop, I was actually taking things that I wrote in like 2012 and 2013 and just putting a new cover on them and showing them to the world again.
Look, I've gone back. I've done over 120 episodes of Chasing Earhart, and every time I go back to that podcast, I love what we're doing now and the quality of audio we have now and everything. But if I listen to those early ones, oh, it's just, I wish I could have like go backs. I could come back and like, I wish I could redo that episode and, you know, bring it up to the quality. So I get that. It's like your baby when you put it out. It's your, you know, it's your art. It's a piece of you. So you want it to be as good a representation as it can be.
You'll always love your early work, but at the same time, and I guess it's a good thing when you go back and you see how much you've grown. It's like, oh, well, I must be really great now because I think that this is total crap. But again, all the older ones that I did clean up, still, you know, a diamond in the rough, to use the cliche. There was something there that was worth, you know, polishing and repackaging and seeing what would happen with it.
Oh yeah, every time I listen to old stuff, even if it's episodes of Vanished or whatever it is, and it's like the editor in me, it's hard to listen to that content now, because I was like, I think I've become a far better editor in the last, you know, 6 years than I obviously was when I first started. So I cringe at the mistakes I made in those early days. And I wish, like, man, sometimes I think about it, like, man, should I go back and recut those and sort of remaster them? But my plate is so full right now that I'm just asking for too much at that point, you know? So,
Where I'm sitting, that sounds like a lot more work than just going through a Word document and, you know, fixing the commas and taking out the unnecessary that's and so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about before we get out of here and get into the little fun exit plan we have here. What do you have coming up? Tell everybody what's next for you. What can we expect to see down the road?
My current work in progress is about a third of the way through, and I still have not decided on a title yet, so I can't even tease that here. Sometimes they come
All
to
right.
me right away. Sometimes
Yeah.
I'm sitting there like looking at a basically finished manuscript saying, "All right, guess I gotta call this one something."
Yeah, I feel
This
that.
one's more of a rom-com feel, maybe not as spicy as some of my earlier works, but again, since I'm writing it, you know exactly how it's going to end in that final
Yeah.
chapter.
You know what you're gonna get.
Exactly. Consistency is
Yeah.
key. Further down the line, I know I mentioned, rights reversion clauses with other publishers. There's a couple older books of mine where I know I've definitely hit that time limit. So I'm thinking of a couple of my, I say older, gosh, like books from 2016,
Yeah.
2017, that every now and then someone grabs a copy, but they're really not doing a whole lot for me right now. I'm thinking about, formally requesting the rights to those back. I know I'll need to reformat, do a new cover. Not a problem. I've done it before. And hopefully, I can breathe some new life into those books. And that comes with the added benefit of not feeling pressure to be writing nonstop.
All right. Well, before we get out of here tonight, let's have a little fun. It's become like a necessary tradition that we end each show. This season, we're doing our version, our homage to the Colbert questionnaire. So if you've never seen Stephen Colbert, you're about to have some fun.
Okay.
These are a handful of quick questions that will tell your readers a little more about you. All right. So we're
Okay.
going to run through them right now. Are you ready?
All right, how much time do I get to think before I answer?
Oh, you could take your time.
All right, so this is not like one of those knee-jerk reactions, the very first thing you say determines your whole personality type thing.
No. These are just some fun ones. And you have take your time as we go through each one of them. Some of them will be easier than others. We'll have some fun. All right. We'll start with a softball question. All right, Thea, what is the best sandwich?
I like a really good meatball sub. Lots of mozzarella cheese.
That's a popular one this season. All right. That's a good one. All right. Good first one. All right. So what is the one thing you own that you really should throw out?
I'm going to count this because while it's in the donation pile in my garage right now to, for the pickup, it's still in my house. I guess I haven't thrown it out yet. So we're going to count it. I have two winter coats that predate me meeting my husband.
Wow.
And
Okay.
I
So
finally replaced them this winter, and I am preparing to say goodbye to them. I think I got one of them in, oh gosh, 2007.
wow, so they've had a nice run.
Good. They served me
They
well.
served you well. All right, that counts. That counts, damn it. We'll keep going. All
It's
right.
still in the house right now. So
That's right. That works. Okay, what is the scariest animal?
I'm going to be so stereotypical right now. I hate
Yeah,
spiders.
well,
I really hate spiders.
they're always right at
They're
the head of the
gross.
pack, so that's not a.
Yeah, like the little cute ones are fine. The giant hairy ones are the no.
Yeah.
Please don't send me pictures of spiders. I will block you.
Oh, there you go. All right. She warned you. Apples or oranges?
Apples.
All right. Have you ever asked someone for their autograph? Bonus points if you have a story.
I'm thinking. I feel like when I was in college in music school, we would sometimes have people who I guess were only really known in the classical music world coming through, and I know my roommate did once. I don't know if I went with her, and I don't even remember who it was. And even if I did, I don't think it would have been anyone that the listeners would actually have heard of. But at the time, it seemed really cool.
All right, so you have. It's okay. That works. That counts. All
Yeah,
right.
if I didn't, then my roommate definitely did.
All right. I'll take that. All right. Number six. What do you think happens when we die?
Are you asking me what I really think happens or what do I want to happen? Because those might be two different answers.
We have one that kind of rides this toward the end. So let's talk about maybe what you think happens when we die instead of not what you want to happen. We'll save that for later.
What I think really happens
Yeah.
is probably just lights out, you stop, that's it. You're here 1 minute, you're gone the next. And again, while I would like to think there's some sort of soul, consciousness, whatever, meeting up with your loved ones somewhere, that would be great. And I would really, really like. But I'm not really convinced that that is the case.
Fair enough. All right, number seven. What is your favorite action movie?
Remember when I said I don't watch TV? I don't watch television
That's right.
movies
I knew
either.
when I asked you that. I said, this might be hard, but that's okay. You can go back a ways.
This is gonna be very hard. I'm gonna be here for like an hour trying to come up with an action movie.
I'll let you slide and say, what's your favorite movie?
Oh, my favorite movie is not an action movie. Is that okay? Will it count?
That's fine. Yeah, I'll let it slide this time.
All right, my favorite movie is Clue.
Okay.
Jim Carrey as the butler, etc.
Okay. All right.
Best movie ever made.
That's a good pick.
I guess, sure, if we squint, there's a couple action sequences in there. They run around and people get killed. Good enough.
Yeah, that constitutes some action. That works. All right, I'll buy that. All right. These next two, we'll give them to you back to back. Give me your least favorite smell and of course your favorite smell.
Least favorite smell, rotten eggs, because I had a bad egg allergy as a kid. So it wasn't just, oh, this smells bad. It was, oh, this could possibly kill me in the next 5 minutes. Favorite smell, coffee.
Yeah.
I love coffee. I live and die by coffee. Coffee is my best friend.
I'm not a coffee guy at all, but I do love the smell of coffee. Like fresh ground, that is really, really one of the best smells. It's got to be. So I'm with you on the smell part of
Okay, I'll forgive you for not drinking it. Each their own.
it. All right. This is everybody's favorite one. What is your favorite curse word?
Yeah, I'd probably say fuck the most. I let it slip in here. And gosh, it could be used in just about any situation. Happy situations, sad situations, angry situations, sexy situations. It
It's
is
amazing.
just, it's a good one. You
Yeah.
can use it for any, it goes with everything. Because a fuck is the new black.
It's the jack of all trades. Absolutely. Okay, let's see if I am right on this. What is the most used app on your phone? Is it Twitter?
Probably
Okay.
Twitter or email,
All right.
maybe the app to book my gym classes,
Okay.
both booking them and remembering to cancel them in time when I'm not going so I don't get charged an extra $12.
Yeah, well, we've all been there, haven't we? All right. This is a tough one. You only get one song to listen to for the rest of your life. Tell me the name of that song.
We're gonna cheat and we're gonna go with classical music to pick something long.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with the 1812 Overture because I've actually used that sometimes to get myself into a writing mood because it, just like fuck, it covers all the bases. We have the loud, exciting parts. We have the softer, more mellow parts. So anything you need it for, it can do for you.
And you're not the first person who has actually chosen classical music for that question. So that's a good one. Good
Okay.
pick. Good pick. All right. Here's that back half of that question from earlier. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Oh, your books were awesome. Good job.
Right. I like it. I like it. All right. We got two more questions and then we're out of here tonight.
All right.
I love these final two. You can go surface level with these, or you can go, as deep as you want. Tell me something that you used to value that you no longer value today.
As I mentioned before, ask me about my two music degrees that I don't use. I was raised, as I'm sure a lot of people were, that the one right career path is you do well in high school, you go to college, and that's the only way you can get a good job. And then again, since I was teaching, my state required a master's degree within 5 years, so I spent money on that. And I think when I was in that like late teen, early 20 age range, I don't know if looking down is maybe the right phrase, but maybe I thought more of people who had like
Yeah.
college and advanced degrees. And now my day job is you need a GED and the training certificate, and that's all you need. I've met plenty of successful people who have no schooling beyond high school, and they're doing just fine. So over the years, my opinion on higher education has changed.
Well, that's a valid argument though. And I'm with you on a lot of that. I really believe a lot of the same things you're talking about there. All right. The final question of the night. Now, you don't have to give me this in a sentence. I'm just looking for descriptive words. Describe the rest of your life in five words.
Successful, loving, and that goes in both directions. Humor, because if we're not laughing, then what are we doing? You've got to be laughing. Family, family is important to me.
Yes.
And excitement. I
Yeah.
don't care how old you get, you still need new experiences and go down the big water slide with your kids, even if you're a grown ass adult like I am.
Wise words to end the night. All right, The Hummingbird and the Hawk is the book. Thea, where can everybody find you online? Go ahead and plug your website, plug your books, all that jazz, please.
All right, thealandon.com, as we sit here right now, is under construction. It's a work in progress and it's getting closer. Either way, it looks simple, but everything you need to find is right there if you go to thealandon.com. Almost all the socials are Thea Landon at Thea Landon, except Instagram. For whatever reason, they made me put the dot in there, Thea.Landon. That's annoying. Don't ask me why. But yeah, if you go to the website, it's linked there. And if you happen to want signed books, eventually that will migrate over to the new website. But as of right now, that's on Etsy, and that is thealandonbooks.etsy.com.
All right. Links to everything we talked about tonight in the show notes. Thea, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for inviting me on. This was a lot of fun.
Another conversation behind us. Thanks for hanging out with me and my friends. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media as we post each new conversation as they air, news, show information, and more. Go to facebook.com/ me and my friends pod. On Twitter, you can search the handle me, my friends pod. And on Instagram, search the handle me and my friends pod. If you enjoyed the conversation tonight, please do me a favor and head to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher and rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Me and My Friends is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson. The show's music is created and performed by producer Riddiman. The opinions on Me and My Friends are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Eben Films Incorporated. Chris Eben Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. Any audio clips used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of education and entertainment, and no infringement is ever intended. Me and My Friends is an exclusive trademark of Chris Eben Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Eben Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Me and My Friends is a Chris Eben Films production. All rights reserved.